Chapter 9. Naomi. Once upon a time, there had been a belter girl named Naomi Nagata. And now, there was a woman. Even though the difference between the two had been created a day, an hour, a minute at a time, the Venn diagram of the two almost didn't overlap. What could be cut away, she'd cut years ago. What remained did so in spite of her efforts. For the most part, she could work around them. "Enjoy your stay on Ceres," the customs agent said, his eyes already flicking to the man standing behind her. She nodded, smiling politely through the spill of her hair, and walked out into the wide corridors of the spaceport, another face among the millions. Ceres Station was the biggest city in the belt. 6 million people, more or less, in a hollowed asteroid hundreds of kilometers in diameter. She'd heard that the port traffic alone could add as many as 1 million transient bodies on a given day. For most of her life, it had been the symbol of interplanetary colonialism. The Tower of the Enemy, on native belter ground. Outside the spaceport proper, the corridors were warm, bordering on hot. The entropic load of the city trapped by the thermos bottle vacuum of space. Moisture thickened the air, and the smell of bodies and dried piss was like seeing an old friend smile. 3-meter-high screens shouted advertisements for machine rigs 1 second and high fashion the next, their clamor only a thread in the constant roaring symphony of voices and carts and machinery. A public newsfeed was showing images of fighting somewhere on Earth. Another little insurgent cult or traditional ethnic conflict calling for its due and blood again, important only because it was on Earth. Even for belters, who'd called the float their home for generations, Earth carried a symbolic load. The mother of humanity with her boot firmly on belter necks. On the screen, a pale-skinned man with blood sheeting down from a scalp wound held up a book, probably a holy book. He was shouting, his mouth squared by rage. Kill as many people in the belt, and it wouldn't have been news, even now. She turned spinward, looking for a food kiosk serving something appealing. There were the usual corporate products, the same at any station. Now that the OPA ran Ceres, there were also other options. Jajet and egg curry, cow-style noodle bowl, red kibble. The foods of her childhood. Belter foods. The kitchen on the Rocinante had been designed by someone in the Martian Navy, and the food stocks it accepted were always nourishing, usually good, and sometimes excellent. But they weren't her food. She opted for red kibble from a scarred kiosk with adhesive from generations of nightclub flyers caking its sides. It came in a brown pressed shred container that fit in her left palm with a plastic spatula like a flattened spoon to eat with. The first bite filled her mouth with cumin and her mind with dust-covered memory. For a moment, she was in her bunk on Teo Kristek's ship, huddled over the white ceramic bowl she had loved then and forgotten for years, eating quietly while the others sang in the galley. She couldn't have been more than 6 at the time. But the memory was fresh and bright. She took another bite, savoring it. As she did, she saw the man following her. He was thin, even for a native. His hair a dirty gray that flowed back from his head like the folded wings of a bird. He stood maybe 15 meters away, watching the newsfeed with an air of mild boredom. She couldn't have said what drew her attention to him and left her certain that he was there because of her. Something about the casual way he didn't look toward her, maybe, or the angle of his stance. Naomi turned spinward again, moving quickly without running, forcing him to keep up. As she walked, she scanned the crowd around her. If she was right, there might be others working in a team. She slid easily through the gaps in the press of bodies, finding the places that opened for a moment as other people crossed her path and each other's. She had spent 6 months on Ceres when she was 13 and between ships, but the station was still a long way from home territory for her. She did her best, making for a side corridor that she was almost certain ran between the wider pathways. And maybe she was wrong. Maybe the man, whoever he was, had just happened to be there when she was feeling particularly anxious. She didn't look back until her side of the corridor rejoined the larger flow of foot traffic from the next gate over. She took the ground in at a glance and found the place she needed. A currency-changing booth 4 meters away with opaque privacy walls made a little space in the flow of people like a stone in a river. Without pausing, she walked to the dead space at its far side and leaned against it, her shoulder blades taking in the cool of the metal. The air was thick enough that she was sweating a little, a dampness at her collarbone and the fringes of her hair. She made herself small and unobtrusive, and counted slowly backward from 100. At 32, Wings hurried past her, his chin high, scanning the crowd before him. The bright metallic taste of fear filled her mouth, and she turned back into the booth and then passed it the other way, down the corridor she'd just left. As she retraced her steps, her mind raced through possibilities. Marco had finally decided to end their standoff, and the threat to Philip had been bait for the trap. Or the security forces had been waiting all this time, and she was about to get caught at last. Or someone who'd watched the news feeds from Illis too much had decided to stalk her. Or Marco was just sending his man to check up on her. The last wasn't least likely. Back in the main corridor, she flagged down a cart and paid for a trip up 3 levels to an open park. The woman driving the cart didn't look at her twice, which was a relief. Naomi sat back against the hard-formed plastic and finished her kibble. The tires hissed against the decking as they took the ramp up, closer to the center of spin and farther from the port. "Go to west someplace precise?" the driver asked. "Don't know where I'm going," Naomi said. "No one I'm there." She'd met Marco when she was 16 and finishing her distributed classwork equivalency on Hygieia Station. On Luna, her work would have gotten her engineering placements at any of the big shipyards. Since it was just an equivalency, she'd known she had another 3, maybe 4 terms before she could get the jobs, even if she already knew how to do the work. Marco had been part of a salvage and mining crew that based its repairs at Hygieia Station, then looped out into the belt proper, scraping out rare metals and taking care sometimes of the wrecks of old ships that crossed their paths. And maybe, the rumor was, some wrecks that were very, very new. His captain had been an old man named Roku, who hated the inner planets as much as anyone in the belt. The crew was the deepest flavor of OPA there was. Not a military cell, because no one had asked them yet. Naomi had been living with Tia Margolis, another of her adopted aunts, and trading out unlicensed work at the refining station for air, water, food, network access, and a place to sleep. At the time, Marco and his cohort had seemed like a bastion of stability. A crew that had been working the same ship together for 7 missions was as good as family to her. And Marco himself had been amazing. Dark eyes, dark, soft hair, a Cupid's bow mouth, and a beard that felt against her palm the way she imagined it would to stroke a wild animal. He'd haunted the corridors outside the station bar, too young still to buy, but more than charming enough to get older people to buy for him, on the few occasions he couldn't convince the merchants to bend the rules directly. The others on Roku's crew, Big Dave, Sin, Mikam, Carl, had all outranked Marco on the ship and followed his lead on shore. There hadn't been a particular moment when she'd become part of their crew. She'd just fallen into orbit with the others, been at the same places, laughed at the same jokes, and then, at some point, she was expected. When they cracked the seal on a storage gate and made it into a temporary invitation-only club, she was invited. And then, before long, she was helping to crack the seal. Hygieia Station hadn't been at its best in those days. The Earth-Mars alliance had looked solid as stone back then. The taxes and tariffs on basic supplies hovered just below too expensive to sustain life, and sometimes above it. The ships that ran there ran on air so lean they courted anoxia, and the black market in usable hydroponics was a live and active one. Hygieia Station, while nominally the property of an Earth-based business conglomerate, was in practice a ragged autonomous zone, held together by habit, desperation, and the bone-deep belt of respect for infrastructure. When Marco was there, even the old, cracked ceramic decking seemed a little less crappy. He was the kind of person who changed what everything around him meant. There had been a Belter girl named Naomi who would have sworn she'd follow him anywhere. She was a woman now, and she'd have said that wasn't true. But here she was. Bistro Ravchina was high up toward the center of Spin. Doors of rusted steel painted in sealant blocked the way in, and a bouncer, half a head taller than her and twice as wide across the shoulders, glowered as she passed through them. He didn't stop her. Up this far, more of the station's spin felt like lateral pull. Water poured on the slant. It wasn't only the cheapness of the real estate that made these corridors thicker with belters. The Coriolis here started to have an effect just north of subliminal, and that wasn't a thing that Earthers and Martians ever became really comfortable with. Living in Spin was a source of belter pride, a mark of who they were and how they were different. Dark music filled the place, the rhythm like a constant low-level assault. The floor was sticky where it wasn't covered with peanut shells, and the smell of salt and cheap beer filled the air. Naomi went to the back, taking a seat sheltered from as many lines of sight as she could manage. Somewhere between 15 and 20 people sat or stood around the place. She could still feel their gazes on her. Her jaw slid forward a degree, her mouth taking on a scowl that was protective coloration as much as actual displeasure. The wall she rested against vibrated with the bass. She ordered a drink from the table system and paid with a preloaded chit. Before the thin-faced boy behind the bar could deliver it, the metal doors to the corridor opened again, and Wings came in. His movements were tight and anxious, his expression closed and angry. He hadn't followed her here. This was where he headed back to after he failed. Naomi faded back another centimeter. Wings sat at the bar, stood up, sat again. A door, hidden by shadows at the back of the club, opened. The man who came out was huge. The muscles of his neck and torso were so large and defined she could have used him as an anatomy lesson. His steel-gray hair was cut close to the scalp, white lines of scar crossing behind his left ear like the map of a river. A massive tattoo of the OPA's split circle logo decorated the side of his neck. He went to the bar where Wings was waiting. Wings's hands were already out in apology. Naomi couldn't hear what he said, but the gist was clear enough. He'd seen her. He'd lost her. He was sorry. Please don't rip his kneecaps off. She let herself smile a little. The big man tilted his head, nodded, said something that seemed to relieve Wings enough that he managed to smile. The big man turned slowly, squinting into the gloom of the club. When his gaze reached her, it stopped. The boy at the bar started forward, her drink on a tray. The big man put a hand on the boy's chest, pushing him back. Naomi sat up a little straighter, looking up into the big man's eyes as he reached the table. They were as pale as she remembered. "Knuckles," he said. "Sin," Naomi replied, and then his massive arms were around her, lifting her up. She returned the embrace. The smell and heat of his skin was like hugging a bear. "God, you haven't changed at all, have you?" "Only got better, Ukti. Bigger and brighter." He put her down with a thump. His smile drew lines all across his face like ripples in a pool. She patted his shoulder, and his grin grew wider. At the bar, Wings's eyes were big as saucers. Naomi waved at him. The man sent to follow her hesitated, then waved back. "So, what did I miss?" Naomi asked as Sin led her to the door at the back of the club.
"Only all of it, Sasa," Sin rumbled. "How much did Marco say?"
"Very damned little."
"Always the way. always the way.
Past the thin door, a corridor snaked back into the raw stone of the asteroid. The sealant was old, gray and flaking, and cold radiated out from the stone. Three men leaned against the wall, guns in their hands. The oldest was Carl. The younger two she didn't know. She kissed Carl's cheek as she passed. The others looked at her with a mix of distrust and awe. The hidden hallway ended at a steel door.
"Why so secret?" she asked. "You know the OPA runs series now."
"There's OPA and there's OPA," Sin said.
"And you're that other one," she said, but with warmth in her voice that covered her unease.
"Always," Sin agreed.
The door slid open, and Sin ducked to pass through. It was impossible to see around his bulk. Naomi followed.
"Got here and no further," Sin said over his shoulder. "And best we don't float too long. Plan had us back with Marco a month ago."
"Marco's not here?"
"Nobody here but us chickens."
There was a smile in the words. The chamber they stepped into was wide and cold. A portable scrubber moved stale air and left the smell of rubber. Formed plastic shelves held rations and water. A thin laminate table had five stools around it, and an old network repeater hung from a hook by its wires. A set of bunks leaned against the wall four high. There were bodies curled under the blankets, but if they were sleeping, Sin didn't take notice of them. His voice carried at the same volume.
"Thing is, better we don't be where anyone can reach us when it all comes down, Sasa."
"When what comes down?" Naomi said. Sin sat at the table, reached out a long arm, and pulled an unlabeled bottle from the shelves. He pulled the cork from its neck with his teeth.
"Aye, Knuckles," he said with a chuckle. "You said he didn't tell you much. You weren't singing low, were you?"
Naomi sat on one of the stools as Sin poured amber liquid into two glasses. The fumes smelled of alcohol and butter and burned sugar. Naomi felt her mouth responding to the scent. The taste was like coming home.
"Nothing like Tia Margolis' brandy," Sin said with a sigh.
"Nothing ever," Naomi said.
"So, now that I'm here, why don't you fill me in?"
"Well," Sin said, "it's these pinche ring gates. You know better than anyone. Another 1,000 inner planets and a whole new set of reasons they may as well fuck the belt, Casey. And half the belt sucking the butcher's cock and making themselves out noble and official and political. So we, and by we I mean Marco, yeah? We decide about 2 or 3 years ago, we don't talk about it,"
a young man's voice said sharply. Sin looked at the door. Thick with dread, Naomi turned too. The boy looked terribly old and terribly young at the same time. His skin was darker than Marco's, and his hair had more curl. The eyes were the same, though, and the mouth. Something huge, larger than oceans, moved in her chest. Emotion she'd buried rose up, and the rip threatened to pull her away. She tried to hide it, but she had to put a hand flat on the table to steady herself. He stepped into the room. The sand-colored shirt was large on him, but she could see that his body was in the place between the coltish growth of adolescence and the thickening muscle of a man. One of the figures on the bunk stirred and turned, but didn't otherwise react. "We don't talk about it until we're safely back. Not even here. Not at all, sabes?"
"Savvy me?"
Sin said.
"Just thought since..."
"I know what you thought. It passes, but we don't talk about it." For the first time, the young man's eyes turned to hers. Her own struggle was mirrored in his eyes. She wondered what she looked like to him. What was in his mind and heart, where hers was joy and guilt and venomous regret? This was the moment she hadn't allowed herself to want. She'd known it was coming since the message from Marco arrived on Tycho. She wasn't ready for it. He made a small, quick smile and nodded to her.
"Philip," she said carefully,
as if the word were fragile. When he answered, his voice could have been her echo. Mother?